speaker is that.
Looking for a pair of lost sunglasses.
Is that Jennifer Weissman
and Paul Arvison?
Arvison, the AAAS Dozer.
Dozer. Don't fall asleep. No dozing.
Perceptions Project, bringing scientists and religious leaders together. We're really honored to have Jennifer here from AAAS. Thank you.
Thank you very much. By the way, Larson's comics are my favorite ever.
Yeah.
So, greetings. Many of you know me. I have multiple hats here at ASA, but I'm an astronomer by training and profession. But one of the public engagement programs that I work with is with the AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And in particular, one of their public engagement programs, which is called the Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion, which I'll explain a little bit about. I'm here with Dr. Paul Arvison here in the front row, who worked with us on this project for years. And I will be giving you kind of the mechanics of the program that we've done with the Dozer program, and Paul will reflect on its impact and its importance in particular for evangelicals. And then also I'd like to point out David Buller here in our midst, who works with the Dozer program as well. So we're glad David is here. Faith Tucker was an intern with our Dozer program and also worked with us on the staff there for some time. So we're really grateful for Faith's contributions as well. So the Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion program was established in 1995 to facilitate communication between scientific and religious communities. So AAAS is not a religious organization. The Dozer program is not a religious program. We're not trying to instill religious faith, nor are we trying to denigrate religious faith. Our entire purpose is to help facilitate better, more productive conversation between scientists, whatever their views are on faith and religion, and religious communities. And why are we doing this? It builds on the AAAS's long-standing commitment to relate scientific knowledge and technological development to the purposes and concerns of society at large. So how do we do this at Dozer? We're not trying to promote any particular religious view or religious faith. But what we do is talk about what's interesting going on in science today. There's so many hot topics that beg questions about the ethical impact of technological developments or theological or philosophical questions. So what we try to do is bring to the table what's going on in science, forefront science, and then bring to the table different components of society to talk about that. Scientists, religious people, religious leaders, ethicists, philosophers, and facilitate conversation focused on particular science issues. I have found that works a lot better than just bringing people together and say, science and religion, discuss, you know, and then, you know, you get a vibrant discussion, but it doesn't go anywhere, right? It just everybody walks out thinking what they did when they walked in. But if you say, you know, life on other planets, drop that. What does that imply? Well, then you get a focused conversation on, does it imply that human life is random and meaningless, or does it actually imply that if there's life elsewhere and that makes life even more significant? You know, it gives a different flavor to the conversation. So here's some examples of things we've done. We have conferences, we have symposia workshops, we have public lectures. This is just a sample so you can see some of these, the breadth of topics we try to bring people to discuss. I'll discuss that conference perception soon because that's what this whole talk is about. But other public lectures we've done are, for example, this past winter we had an event called Did My Brain Make Me Do It? The Neuroscience of Morality. And we had a neuroscientist and a neuroethicist come and talk about what we know about the mind and how that relates to what we expect in terms of people's behavior and responsibility. We had a very interesting event called Conversations, Science, Scientists, and the Human Spirit, where we interviewed Krista Tippett. Some of you may know Krista Tippett hosts a very popular public radio program called On Being, and she interviews hundreds of thought leaders. In particular, she also interviews, as part of that group, scientists and theologians. So we turned the tables and we interviewed her to ask her what she'd learned from all those conversations. We've had events on exoplanets and the impact of potentially finding life beyond Earth, about our genetic predispositions, about the limits of science. Can science explain everything? We had two scientists come forward and who had different points of view on that, and I thought that was very powerful because it explained that even scientists aren't all monolithic on their understanding of what kinds of questions science is good at answering. And then you see others there, the human microbiome, how to discuss science with religious students and audiences, synthetic biology, brain-machine interfaces and how that's getting blurred, all kinds of interesting topics. By the way, the human microbiome is a very hot topic. It implies that we have thousands of organisms inside of us that have different DNA than we do, so we're not one. We are walking ecosystems. So think about that a little bit. All right. Our work is entirely grant-funded, so we are constantly looking for new grants and support to do what we think are useful things. These are our four active projects right now, or recently active projects. One is the Science for Seminaries program, where we are working with pilot seminaries who want to integrate more science into the core required curricula for their seminary students. One is a new program for religion reporters to give them more exposure to science. One is a project we're developing to engage more scientists in conversations about science and better equipped to talk about science respectfully with science with religious people in their classrooms or in their public audiences. And then the Perceptions Project, which is, I'm going to explain in more detail. So just quickly, if you're interested in our seminaries project, these are our 10 pilot seminaries. They're all members of the Association for Theological Schools. And they range from Catholic through mainline Protestant and into evangelical and conservative Protestant flavors of seminary. And you can learn more about that project at the dedicated website scienceforseminaries.org. The Science for Religion Reporters program is just getting started. We're hosting a pre-conference for religion news writers in August for their annual conference. And then we're sponsoring an award to bring 12 religion reporters to the AAAS meeting next year so they can have an in-person experience with pop science to help them in communicating science to religious audiences. The Engaging Scientists program we're developing, as I mentioned, will seek to bring more scientists. There are a lot of scientists, whether they're religious or not, who are people of goodwill who just don't know how to be more effective and more sensitive at talking about science with religious students in their classrooms, and they want to be. And so we're seeking to develop resources to help the scientific community be better equipped for this. And then there's the Perceptions Project, which is what Paul and I are here to talk about today. The Perceptions Project was designed to probe perceptions, all right? And here are some of the objectives to probe. That first quote is from the grant proposal, to probe how a broad range of religious people, with a particular emphasis on evangelical Christians, understands and thinks about science. Why the emphasis on evangelicals? Well, the AAAS recognizes that, depending on how you define evangelical, something like 25% or 30% of the U.S. population would be considered evangelical Christians, and yet, so they're a substantial fraction of the U.S. population, but evangelicals often have mixed feelings about science, and of course AAAS is very concerned about public support of science and maintaining a positive impact of science for everybody. So that's, but scientists are often puzzled by evangelicals. Who are they? What do they think? Are they the same thing as fundamentalists? You know, who are they? And likewise, evangelicals get puzzled by scientists. Some of the goals here are to investigate the underlying perceptions, right or wrong, that religious people and religious communities have about scientists and science, and likewise the perceptions that scientists, as broadly defined in our work, as people in science-related professions, have about religious believers in relation to science. And then to build pathways of communication and understanding between scientists and religious communities, in particular evangelicals, through personal interactions and resources, hopefully to improve the national climate for discourse on science, technology, and their ethical uses and implications. All right, so this was a three-year project, and it had three chunks. We did 1 year basically focused on doing a major survey, and then we did 1 year of workshops in different cities across the country where we brought religious leaders, pastors, and scientific leaders from those geographical areas together for a day or two for facilitated interactions. Many of these people had never met anyone like that in their own community because they were living in separate worlds in the same city. And then the third big piece was a national conference we just had in March. Our partners in the project include Rice University's Elaine Howard Eklund. She's a sociologist and leads a group, excellent group, that knows how to do surveys of this type, and she basically helped us lead this survey. The American Scientific Affiliation has been a wonderful partner, the National Association of Evangelicals, and two consulting firms, Public Agenda and Gray Matter Consulting, that really helped us with focus groups and these dialogue groups. Our advisory committee, you'll recognize some of the pictures there, including Randy Isaac there in the middle. But we had a terrific advisory group, including pastors, religious leaders, scientists, science leaders. You'll also see down on the bottom there Jeannie Scott, who led the National Center for Science Education for many years. And so she's very well respected in the scientific community. You'll see Ron Numbers there, historian of science. You'll see some evangelicals there and some folks who are not, and quite a variety of folks there, and they were all worked together and just made a terrific advisory and diverse advisory committee for us. Quickly, we did this online survey to begin with of almost 10,000 people, several religious groups, and also a wide swath of folks in science-related careers. Elaine Eklund did qualitative interviews as well of quite a few people. We held focus groups in Ohio and Tennessee, D.C. and Virginia. We had regional workshops then with religious leaders and scientists in Pasadena, Denver, and Atlanta. And then we also did workshops with some of the other religious groups that were not evangelical-centered. We had a workshop for the Jewish community, Catholic community, and mainline Protestant community. And then we finished up with a national conference with over 200 people participating from several religious traditions and scientists and science leaders. So in total, we've reached directly about 4,300 participants, and then we have a lot of material that we hope is reaching many, many more people than that. Participant hours, right. You're right, sorry. Participant hours. Good point, yes. All right, so let me just quickly give you a little glimpse of the survey. The survey is big and comprehensive, and you can go online to our Web Perceptions Project website and get all the details. But just so you can get a flavor, what do religious people think about science? What do scientists think about them? Here's some excerpts from what we learned from the survey. What about one question or a statement? Most scientists are hostile to religious people. Do you believe that? Do you not believe that? About 22% agree or strongly agree with that statement, with the strongest agreement coming from evangelical Protestants. Some lesser agreement from Catholics and mainlines, and lesser from the Jewish respondents. So there you see that in bar chart form. Evangelical Protestants had a sense that most scientists are hostile to religion. And interestingly, the evangelical Protestants who had science-related careers felt that even the most strongly, all right? So what does that tell you? That the evangelicals who are in science-related work environment tend to feel, I guess, that the most sense of, perhaps an unwelcome atmosphere, I'm not sure. What about the question, are most religious people hostile to science? Scientists felt that was the case more than evangelical Protestants, and even evangelical Protestant scientists did not feel that was much the case at all. Okay. We didn't only talk about only survey evangelicals. We had respondents from many other categories here. You'll see evangelicals, mainline Protestants, and Catholics were the main swath of respondents. Also, people who identified themselves as having no religion. As well. And in the subsequent charts, you'll see a line here. It was Jews, Mormons, other. The line for Muslims and Eastern, just don't even look at that line, because what Dr. Eklund did was there were so few respondents that were either Muslims or from various Eastern religions that for some reason she lumped them all into one category. But it's not statistically significant because these religions don't have anything to do with each other, and so they shouldn't really be in that bar chart. Most of those respondents were scientists who had come to the U.S. On work permits, so ignore that line statistically. But when we ask people, are you very interested in new scientific discoveries, you see that you get a large positive response from Jews in the no religion category, most people, and the lowest response of positive was evangelical Protestants, unfortunately. What about conflict? My understanding of science and religion can be described as a relationship of conflict, and I am on the side of science. So the people who felt that that relationship was conflicting and in that conflict, they would lean toward the side of science. The no religion folks were way, way positive on that response. And then you can see the others, and evangelicals and Mormons really didn't like that answer at all. Conflict on the side of religion, evangelicals answered strongly more positive in that direction. How about independence? These are really answering different kinds of questions. A lot of people kind of fit into that that middle range, with the lowest response rate being evangelicals there. And then collaboration. These can be used to support the other, and Paul will perhaps say a little bit more about what collaboration might look like. But here you have a very interesting result. Evangelicals rank very highly on saying that actually science and religion can be collaborative and support one another, more so than almost any other group. So that was really quite interesting. How about, will science find a natural explanation for everything eventually? The no religion folks found that to be something that many of them strongly supported. Jewish and Catholic respondents in the middle ground there, and then evangelicals and mainline Protestants were below the average on feeling like science will eventually explain everything. Should science be open to considering miracles? Evangelicals were the strongest, saying yes, scientists should be open to considering miracles, and Mormons the same way. So that's just a sample. We have a much, much larger, more in-depth survey. We have some quotes here, but I want to pass the baton to Paul here very quickly. But here's a person from a high socioeconomic status evangelical church in Chicago who basically says all scientists bring bias, and they bring their upbringing, how they see the world, into that science. So I think whether you're religious or you're secular, there's a set of beliefs you see. You have a pair of glasses on, and you're looking to the science through those beliefs and glasses. So that's that was an interesting observation. This person does not see conflict between the Bible and science. This is a mainline Protestant respondent in the qualitative interviews, saying, basically, we don't know the methods by which God used to create. There's no conflict. All right. We held these workshops across the country, as I mentioned as well. To me, these were much even more interesting than the survey, because we brought people who could actually talk about where their thoughts and perceptions are coming from together. And in each of these cities, Pasadena, Denver, and Atlanta, we had one or two days where we had scientists. And the recruiting for these was the hardest thing of all, to know who to ask. And it wasn't that we had trouble getting people to come, because the scientists especially were very eager to come. That surprised me. And not just any scientists. We had department chairs of major secular research institutions who were carving out 2 days from their busy calendar because they wanted to come. They felt like this was so important to understand how to relate better to religious leaders. And we had pastors as well. And we would have not only facilitated dialogue in a room, but we brought them all on field trips to a science lab. And many of our pastors said that they really didn't, you know, they never had the feel for what a real down and dirty science lab was like till they had done that. And then likewise, we took them all to a religious facility, a church or a seminary, and many of the scientists said, you know, I've never thought I'd set foot in such a place, but wow, you know, it really has a different feel than what I ever thought. So it's that breathing the same air, it's that personal communication that we learned is the most powerful. It's instead of just talking about science and religion as abstract ideas, when you can bring scientists and religious people together to get to know one another, it's very powerful. And many of them said, you know, we need to start having coffee together. We need to really, really spend time together. One theologian said, I think there was a greater openness to religion on the part of scientists than I might have expected. And one scientist said, the younger pastors seemed more open and engaging than I expected. One evangelical NGO leader said, I saw the scientists' passion for their work, their openness to dialogue, the common platforms that exist. So they're really investigating each other's worlds, and I thought that was powerful. We also, as I said, had workshops for several other faith communities. We had a workshop in New York with a Jewish community with an organization called Sinai and Synapses. You should check out their website. But I like this quote from one scientist who's also a rabbi who said, my underlying conflict is that as a scientist, I'm trained to look for answers. But as a rabbi, I'm taught to live with questions. You know, that's quite interesting. All right, and then we did similar workshops for Catholic and mainline Protestants. And each one of these groups have different challenges and issues in their particular flavor of faith community when they're trying to discuss how to bring more science into their faith community life. And then finally, we had this national conference in March, which was the culmination of this whole project, where we had science leaders and religious leaders and science advocates and the media all together for a full day, and it was really quite amazing. We didn't try to resolve any particular issue, but we talked about how you could better discuss these issues. And we even had the new CEO of AAAS, Rush Holt, come and say how important this was. That it was important for people who claim a professional principle of open-mindedness to actually listen. And then Bill Phillips, physics Nobel laureate, who's also a Christian, who basically said that scientists have a responsibility to interpret their science to the general public, which is largely made up of religious folk. Important for the health of the country. All right, so with that, you can read all the results of this, and including seeing all of the video of all the sessions from that conference at perceptionsproject.org. I encourage you to look up the website. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. And then in general, our Dozer website is AAAS.org/Dozer. One product of this whole project was we encouraged through a grant the National Association of Evangelicals to produce this booklet called When God and Science Meet. And it's a wonderful booklet. It's got many different authors that you'll recognize. It's designed for churches, pastors, and study groups in churches. I have some up here at the end of our presentation. You can come and get one. We also have a table in the exhibit hall, and you can get one. ASA does. ASA was a partner on creating this booklet. You can get it online as well. And so I was surprised. I just looked on the website. The homepage of the National Association of Evangelicals right now has this booklet on its homepage. All right. So you can download the PDF of this as well and use it in your churches. So it's free. So we encourage you to use this resource. Now, I've gone over, but Paul, please come up and tell us why this matters. Alfred North Whitehead says, when we consider what religion for mankind is and what science is, it's no exaggeration to say that the future, of course, of history depends upon the decision of this generation as to the relations between them. I always have to end with a powerful quote. So, Paul, give us some reflections on why this should matter in particular for evangelicals. Right. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, as evangelical scientists, those of us here, we have a key role to play in this. You know, one of the contractors that we worked with on this project was called Public Agenda. And one of their facilitators led our workshops. His name was Isaac Rowlett. And I got to talking to him about some background, because he wasn't too familiar with this creation-evolution debate and all this. So I was filling him in on this. And he says, oh, yeah, I recognize that. You guys think you're all wrapped up around this issue, like this is the most important issue in the world. We deal with all kinds of groups that have dialogue and discussions and debates like this. You guys are not unique. In other words, the kind of issue that we are dealing with is a kind of a cross-cultural or a boundary kind of issue. And there's lots of other subgroups of society and culture that have these kind of issues, going back all the way to like C.P. Snow's two cultures, you know, the humanities versus the sciences. So we live in a world with fragmented knowledge. People are specialized, and they are focused on their narrow specialty, and they have a different language and a different way of approaching things from other groups. And so we constantly are dealing with boundary work, and that's just another part of a way of looking at this. The founder of Public Agenda was a man, Daniel Yankelevich, and he wrote a book which I would highly recommend to you all, The Magic of Dialogue. And he explained that dialogue, I used to think it came from dia, you know, two, but it doesn't mean two. It could mean many more than two, but it's the idea, it means through. It's the Greek word dia for through. Through logos, through the word, through talking, we clarify each understanding of each other. And it really came home to me when we had these workshops where we brought 15 scientists, local professors or working scientists, in with 15 local pastors of churches in the same room together. And so, as Jennifer was saying, you know, a lot of these folks had not seen people like their counterparts before. And actually, the way Jennifer framed the discussion was important, coaching them on civility and on respect for each other. And by framing the conversation properly, we really did, I think, achieve some serious dialogue. We had a lot of free time together, meals together, and we were face-to-face. Now, I appreciate, you know, ASA's new website and all the new technology that we have today, but it was so nice to just get together face-to-face with people so that we could build bonds on a human level. We're getting our humanity in common. So what we learned was to build an emotional foundation first, then start dealing with the content and the rational arguments. First, establish emotional rapport with people through a face-to-face dialogue and have a meal together or something. Like Isaiah says, come, let us reason together. First you come, then you reason together. And so that's what's important. You know, when we're driving a car down the road, we don't relate too well to the other driver, right? They're at a machine and they're not face to face. We need to be together face to face. And so I encourage you to meet with people that are not like you and not just an echo chamber, and get out and find some people that you can dialogue with. So that's just a little bit of, you know, we're kind of out of time, but please, if you have any questions, you know, we'd be happy to discuss that. We have a half hour break coming up here. But the website, perceptionsproject.org, contains a lot of background information. We also interviewed several of the people from these workshops right after the workshop, and they had some very interesting comments. And we have little video clips of some of their comments on there. I'd encourage you to take a look at that. Basically, it broke down a lot of people's stereotypes going in. They found that they could really get along better than the media was telling them they could. And so they found a lot of common ground, and they all basically enjoyed the experience a lot. So I encourage you to do that kind of, replicate those kind of things in your location around the country. So with that, we'll just take some questions.
Do we have any?
We're about out of time, but I'm sure we have the break here, so please entertain some questions.
Okay. Yes.
Do you have any Muslims in your organization, either on the science side or on the mosque religious side? And if not, have you made any effort to recruit them?
Yeah, so the AAAS Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion program is interested in people from all religious faiths. So we get a lot of contact from people from Muslim communities as well who are very interested in the dialogue. We don't have any specific funded programs right now that focus on that community. We certainly had people from the Muslim community at our national conference. This particular project had a stated focus on evangelical Christians, so that's why there's so much emphasis on this particular perceptions project with evangelicals. But for the Dozer program in general, we do have very interested Muslim participants, both scientists and lay people who are interested in the relationship of their faith in science. Everything we do is grant funded, so we have to, if we want to do something specifically and profound with a particular faith community, we have to find a foundation who also thinks that's important and will fund it. So that's always something we're working on. But in principle, yes, we're very interested in that community.
Yes, because science is going to confirm you in your creation.
This would be a good question for Paul. What does that mean, collaboration?
Right. In one of our focus groups, one of the people, we were developing a document called a choice work, which is a facilitator's guide for guiding a discussion or workshop like this. And one of these options was collaboration. We're willing to collaborate. Well, one of our focus group members, ASA member actually, he said, well, what do you mean by collaboration? And so as we thought about that, we realized that collaboration really can be analyzed into different levels. And we thought of four levels. The first level, it would be practical, applied issues such as, you know, if there's a disaster, everybody gets together and fills sandbags and for a flood or you know, helps put out a forest fire. Everybody works together at a certain practical level in the case of, like, serious emergencies, things like that. It doesn't matter what your religion is, whatever. The second level, though, you get into the questions of public policy. And that's where things start to separate. And we have, of course, a lot of our workshop participants bemoaned the concerns about the polarization in our country on just about every issue, the political polarization of things. So we're beginning to unravel that collaboration at the level of public policy on several issues like climate change and education and so forth. The third level would be at the level of the theories of science, and that's what we mostly talk about here at ASA. You know, how should we understand evolution? How should we understand epistemology and questions like at that level? And then at the fourth level would be these fundamental philosophical questions. So you can analyze collaboration into those levels. We deal with some of those here at ASA, but most people are dealing with it at a political level. So, so there's a lot of ways of looking at that.
I remember reading one of the reports from Elaine Howard-Eklund on this research, and I was really struck by one of the results that evangelical Protestants will seek answers about science from the Bible or from their pastor more than any other group. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could kind of expand on that and what the implications are for how we communicate about these things.
You have to comment on that? Well, I could just say you're right. So the survey showed that evangelicals, that everybody, we asked everybody in the survey, who are you most likely to ask if you had a question about science? A science teacher, look to a science resource like Discover Magazine or what? And almost everybody said that they would first look to some science resource like, you know, Google it or something. But evangelicals, like when you ask what their second and third resource would be, evangelicals were twice as likely as anybody else to consult their pastor or the religious leader for advice or help if they had a question about science. So that's why it's incredibly important to help pastors become more familiar with science, good science, so that they are confident and capable of steering. They don't have to become science experts, but to steer their congregation to good resources and to helpful, constructive ways of thinking.
One of the things that jumped out to me when you were showing that was that the evangelicals within science themselves seem to be askew in some of these categories. And I didn't know if you all had any thoughts about trying to follow up with some sort of focus group or workshop or something, and maybe just commenting right now about what your thought behind that. Is it that evangelicals in science know those relationships best and they seem to be around them more, or do you think there's something else to it? And then do you have any thoughts about trying to follow up with that at all?
I missed the key point of your question. Is that evangelical scientists?
It seemed like evangelical scientists were more askew. Would think that they would be more in line with sort of being more understanding and open-minded. It seemed that they were more.
No, what they were more askew on was their perception of whether the science community in general was hostile toward religious people. And it may be that their perceptions are more correct because they're in the science environment. They every day sense the atmosphere, and it seems that for a lot of them, they sense a type of atmospheric hostility that maybe other evangelicals who are not quite in that environment every day don't sense. So, but I would like to know more too, and that's where the qualitative interviews are much more helpful than these. And Dr. Elaine Howard-Eklund is very good at also doing qualitative interviews to find out So what we could do is ask her to do some follow-up qualitative interviews with some of these folks who answered in that way to find out exactly what's going on. What is it that they're experiencing that makes them feel that the atmosphere in science is, to make them feel more than their evangelical peers do about some sense of hostility in science?
I would just want to add a point to that. It would be wrong to assume that evangelicals are generally opposed to modern science. They're supportive of science. They like science, particularly the medical fields and things like that. But there's only these few specific issues, like evolution, climate change is an emerging issue, questions that go into bioethics and medical ethics issues. But beyond, other than those, there's broad support for science among evangelicals.
Ruth?
Yeah, I think we did.
We asked people if they would self-identify as evangelicals, and that was 23% of the U.S. population in our survey. If the number comes out different.
I'll bet you that there would be some who self-identify as evangelicals that other evangelicals would say, oh, there may be one.
Well, we also asked them questions about, you know, biblical authority and how frequently they attend church and how, and so their belief structure. So you can also go into the data and even not pay attention to the self-identification, but look at the other beliefs that they hold to and define another core group that you would call evangelicals, or I would, if you wanted to. We haven't gone into the data and done that, but you could, yeah.
Right. So, I don't know if he's typical.
Yeah.
I'd be interested if college age kids are going to throw out that word for the other things in this company.
I don't know. The labels are never good and often not helpful. Yeah, so. Like I say, for this purpose, who's an evangelical? Scientists don't understand the difference between evangelicals and fundamentalists and this and that and the other. So the definitions are difficult, but even the NAE doesn't have a strong definition, but they basically say that an evangelical is someone who believes in the lordship of Jesus Christ and who takes the Bible very seriously as the word of God, though not necessarily literally, but very seriously. So, but you know, that describes a lot of people in Catholicism and mainline Protestantism too. So it's really a little bit. I think the personal conversion aspect of even the emphasis in evangelicalism on having a personal conversion experience is one thing that may be somewhat unique. But of course, you could find that belief in other Christian traditions as well. So, you know, your point is well taken. Yeah. Right.
So you did this thing. In a national situation, but it was still kind of smaller groups of people get together and breaking down some barriers and so on. Do you have a sense of how that sort of thing could be done on a broader scale level without grant funding and stuff? How do you get pastors and some scientists together without some organizational structure?
Right, well, this is where ASA comes in, the local chapters. This is where groups like the Veritas Forum or InterVarsity come in. They do things like this, and they can bring in a speaker who has some background in some field and get a conversation going or get a workshop going like this. That was one of our main points of this, is that we have done these things as kind of pilot projects. We feel that in some ways this kind of format, when it's properly framed and set up, can be very helpful and successful to all sides.
Let me tell you also that we've developed a couple of resources to help people in their own communities build these kinds of workshops. And one is called the Choice Work Discussion Starter, which is what our consulting firm developed with us and through our focus groups to help facilitate these workshops. They had a guide that basically asked questions of the participants. what do you think about the relationship of religion and science? It was open-ended question. People had to make a choice, three choices, but it wasn't, the point was to get people thinking and talking, and then that opened the floor. And that guide is available on our website here. You can get the Choice Work Discussion Guide. And then the final report from our project here, which also explains how we set up these workshops and why they were important and how you can do that in your own community, that's available online, but it's also available on the table, on the AAAS Dozer table here at this conference. So you can learn something about it. That's our hope, actually, is to figure out how to, these were such great events, how to package them so that other people can take what we learn and easily do something similar in their own environment. And I should have mentioned in our national conference, we had six parallel discussion sessions. One was on origins, one was on environmental stewardship, one was on global health, one was on how scientists can better talk to religious people, one was on science and religion in the media, and one was on science in congregations. And all of these were really rich conversations, and they're all online. So, all right, thank you so much for your interest today. And you can come up and get a book here if you want, or at the table in the exhibit hall.